Blog Talk Radio.
I can't believe we're back, and I can't believe it, times 12. This is San Acordi. I'm so happy to be back here in Taino Radio. Just last night, we had a two-hour power hour talking about ghosts. So we're going to shake it up a little bit. We're going to go down to the Indigenous Caribbean study hour, and guess what? That's right. You know it. She's all the way from the great city of Philly. It's that time of hour. Which place one is this? Great people of the Indigenous Caribbean. And we have our resident anthropologist. And her name is Nancy. There you go. How you like that?
That was perfect. You did the speaking with the music and everything went so smooth this time.
I got your names right. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad to have my theme song back, y'all. I was just in Philly on Sunday for the baseball game. You know, so it's you pass by the statue and everything. It's always good to get out into the city. Yeah.
Now, as a New York Mets fan, I just want to say, did the Phillies get their butt kicked? Or what?
Oh, come on. No. Yeah, they did. Come on. <yeah. laughs> As a Mets fan, you ought to be used to something like that.
Okay, this is a draw. All right, that was good.
Yeah, I think we can both agree we got nothing to say. But, yeah, they did. It was against the San Diego Padres, and, yeah, it was bad. It was a bad beating. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. But it was just nice to be out again, you know, like after COVID and everything all this past year, to be at a baseball game. It was 4th of July, and here I am, like, celebrating you know, with a great American pastime. And I love seeing just how much Caribbean people are represented out in the Major League Baseball fields. There's so many Cubans, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans. My friend who was with me even said something. It's like, man, you people are taking over this whole sport. And it's true, but it's so great. Yeah, it's great. They're great players, and they come from all over the Caribbean. And it's just so cool to see them out there. And, you know, they all pick their, when they come up to bat, they all have they pick their songs and everything that they play when they announce their names. And so many of them had all these, like, reggaeton songs. Somebody had La Bamba, I remember.
That's nice.
It was just so much fun to be back doing something like that, you know?
Oh, that was great. There's only one year I really rooted for the Phillies, and that's when they at the World Series
against
the New York Yankees, New York Yankees, which I hate the Yankees. And
damn it,
they didn't win. Damn it. But you know, the Yankees cheat. It wasn't your fault. The Yankees cheat. You know, they have that short right field fence. It's like 200 feet, you know. They had a bunch of cheaters, you know.
Yeah, they are. But,
so
that was a great year, I remember. We all took off from school that day. We went, you know, everybody went into the city for the parade. It was a historic moment.
Oh, that's nice. That's great. Now, I've been to Philadelphia once. I think I was at the Indigenous Parade. It was an Indigenous Parade. I forget what year I was invited and I went, but it was kind
of
cool.
Yeah,
I want to say it was Philly. Yeah, I want to say it was Philly. But that's awesome. So I think it's important that we, you know, as Taínos, we always love the game, the ball game, right? The bate.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's what I was saying. Like, you know, so many, like, in Cuba, they love baseball. The Dominicans love baseball. You know, it's known as being so quintessentially American, but it's gotten so big in a lot of Latin American countries, particularly in the Caribbean, and that's why there's so many players coming in who are so good, you know?
Yeah. You know, the Mets had a great player from Cuba, Cespedes. And,
That's right. And I think, I want to say Raul Ibanez, who used to be on the Phillies, I think he was Dominican.
I think he was Dominican, yeah, Ibanez.
Yeah, but he was a great player, too, and I loved it. You know, he was part of the Philly Dream Team. Oh, no, he's Cuban. Never mind, I'm wrong. He's Cuban-American.
You got it right.
Well, I was thinking Dominican for some reason, but no, he's Cuban-American. He was part of the Philly Dream Team that year. I had his jersey. I still have his jersey. It's just, you know, it's a sport that used to be solely like white Americans, and now to just see so much representation from all over the islands and everything is really great.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think it's important that, you know, I think in every community, like Boricuas, Cubans, you know, we have that passion for the ball game. And I believe that's rooted in Taíno. What do you think? The Taíno, the whole sense of coming out to the park.
Our slightly different ball game. Ball games.
Very different.
I think sports in general always have had a cultural significance. And now, I mean, in modern days, we say it's, you know, for entertainment or what have you. But I think a lot of it harkens back to those ancient games that were played at least among a lot of indigenous communities and kind of the spiritual and cultural significance that they had, right? Because it's sort of a way to feel like you're in control of something with the spiritual world based on how you play, right? It's like it's a ritual you're acting out.
Right.
And there's so much ritual associated with sports.
Well, I know that I was reading about Utuado in Jayuya, the Caguana ballpark there.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading how they had the petroglyphs on the stones at Abe as the centerpiece there. And I was reading how that's a living semi, you know, when they carved in the stones as well. Imagine you're picked to represent your Yucayeque, whatever, you know, your whole Yucayeque is there, you're getting ready to play this ball game, it's 100-degree weather, right? And you have the nerves.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you
take strength,
all of a sudden you look
it takes courage, yeah.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you look behind you and it's Atabe. Now, if that's not pressure, you know, you got the creature is looking right at you. Right in that stone, right, saying, all right, I'm here, front and center. You guys want to play good.
Yeah, don't throw
women. Oh, that's pressure, right? That's pressure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, same with a lot of the Mesoamerican ball games when they felt they were literally, like, acting out, you know, the playing of the original man against the gods. And, you know, if you lose, you could very well end up being sacrificed or vice versa. So that's pressure too, I would say.
Wow, man, that's deep, man. That's deep. So there you go. That's the full circle.
Well, absolutely, absolutely.
I'm gonna give you the floor. Oh, check this out. Straight out of the studio of Taíno Radio, right here in the Lenape territory, New York City. We have the Philadelphia Phillies winning 9-3, fifth inning against the Chicago Cubs. How about that?
There we go. Okay, that's something. That makes me feel a little better.
There you go, man. See, there you go. We're good.
Yep.
We're good. So that's going to set it up. I know you have a great topic today, and later on we're going to have a guest.
Yeah.
But go for it. Tell us what's going on.
All right.
Yeah.
So I am excited for this one because this is something I've studied a lot in my own anthropological studies just across many cultures, and that is the idea of, or the concept of body modification. And why I love it so much is because it's so universal And it still goes on today, obviously. You know, whatever, no matter what culture, right. what time period, we've always been concerned about how we look, right? We as humans, we love being able to alter our appearance in whatever way we can, or customize it or individualize it for a variety of reasons. And I really think that that's something that's very unique to humanity and human culture, and something that makes us kind of stand out. But among indigenous people specifically, and especially those of the Americas, body modification is something that pretty much every group did to varying degrees. And it was one of the things that really kind of shocked the earlier colonists, you know, the European colonists, because during the time of early colonization in Europe, there was body modification, but not to, I think, to the extent that they saw in the Americas. You know, the whole kind of feel in Europe, which mainly came out of Christianity and then later the Protestant Reformation and everything, was to try to be modest, dress modestly, not call attention to yourself, not expose too much skin or what have you. Whereas in the That's Americas, right. they found people, you know, women had to cover up, men had to cover up. Everybody was, it was kind of the idea of being sort of in plain clothes or plainly dressed was the go-to, because, again, I think a lot of it's tied to Christianity, but also for practical reasons as well, weather-wise and everything. And then in the Americas, they come and they encounter, the first people they encounter, of course, our ancestors, the Tainos, and they're running around, you know, half naked and with piercings and tattoos and body paint and, you know, ornamental jewelry in the hair, around on the body. And that was something really shocking, I think, and jarring from that kind of conservative Christian European perspective, you know, and really gave them the indigenous people that they saw, it exoticized them even more than they already were to these Europeans. But, you know, that's pretty much my perspective of it. But there is evidence to show us that prior to Christianity, actually, some ancient European people did practice the same kind of body modification rituals, like tattooing and piercing, particularly among the Celtic tribal group. One, for example, that comes to mind is the Pictish people of Scotland, who were a Celtic group. And the Romans called them the Picts because it literally meant the painted people. And they said they would have these kind of blue tattoos all over their bodies. And nice. They would fight, their warriors would fight completely nude to kind of show them off. So it wasn't unheard of concept in Europe, but just after, you know, Christianity spread throughout Europe and kind of did away with a lot of that, because you're supposed to consider your body sacred and you can't mark it or mar it in any way. That's considered blasphemous. So that really kind of became the thing. Yeah.
Well, I remember growing up, I remember my elders just, you know, used to hate that, you know. That was like a big sin to come home with a tattoo.
Sure. And it's still something that's, it's not as taboo as it was, but it's been taboo in like Western Euro-American society for a few years, right? Up until recently,
right.
it's just now starting to come out of that. But, you know, in its early days, tattooing was particularly considered taboo. It was considered something that only criminals did, or sailors, soldiers, you know, military people, people who were kind of lowbrow or low class, people who were in those, you know, those freak shows who would get all the tattoos. It was something that wasn't considered part of polite society or part of civilized society. That's why tattooing was illegal, and tattoo shops were all kind of underground, you know. It was a very underground business.
Right.
So it's got that taboo association. But what people don't realize is that for, you know, indigenous people, especially in the Americas, tattooing was sacred, right? I mean, tattoos were done for many reasons. Obviously, the most obvious one to people is to enhance physical attractiveness or for a purely aesthetic purpose, but also for many other reasons, to denote social status was a big one, or level of wealth, or one's ranking within a particular community. Tattooing was also used by a lot of groups to mark physical milestones in someone's life. A lot of the times in many tribes during when children would hit puberty, tattooing became kind of one of those rituals that would mark that. What else? Marriage, things of that nature. If someone was going to become a warrior, there were a lot of tattoos associated with warrior society. Sometimes tattoos were even used to as medicine. You know, you tattoo a certain part of the body to relieve pain, or if that is considered the site of some sort of sickness or something of that nature. If you tattoo a certain sacred symbol there, it's meant to be protective of that area, to help alleviate the pain of that area. So there's so much involved in the art of tattooing, and for a lot of tribes too. And this particularly goes back, you know, the word tattoo comes from the Polynesian word for tattoo, T-A-T-U, literally means like to mark or to etch, you know, to mark, basically, I guess is the most literal translation, because those people in Polynesia throughout, you know, what is modern day Hawaii, Samoa, Tahiti, we've seen that those tribal groups would do very intricate, elaborate ritualistic tattoos on their whole bodies and their faces. And it's something that has continued today. The Moko tattoo of the indigenous New Zealanders, the Maori, that's on the mouth and the chin, is considered a very sacred practice that they still practice today.
All right.
To mark certain points in the life. And it's, again, of course it's taboo, right? Because not only is it a tattoo, but it's on the face. And a lot of people look at that and go, oh, you know, like the idea of a tattoo in general is kind of out there to some people, but to put one right on your face seems to really out there to a lot of people. But that was important,
right.
You know, that's where it was meant to be. And they're not the only ones, of course. In a lot of the Arctic tribes, the women used to tattoo their faces as well as their chests. This was done for medicinal, spiritual purposes. The Ainu women, the indigenous women of Japan, would tattoo the mouths as soon as they hit puberty, creating kind of a black, like, smile shape around the lips and the mouth. The famous story of that one white woman, her name was Olive Oatman, who was kidnapped and eventually sold. Her parents were colonists. They were on one of the Oregon trails, I believe, and of Yavapai Indians, and her sister were taken captive, eventually sold to the Mojave people down in the desert area, but were adopted into them and lived with them for many, many years until they were considered part of the tribe, to the point where Olive, the one woman, her younger sister died of starvation eventually, but Olive, when she was finally found by her own people again, she had the blue cactus tattoo, as they call it, on the chin that all the Mojave gave each other and made sure everybody had, because it would help them get into the afterlife after they died. So it showed that they recognized her as one of their own. And she became really famous after that because people were so shocked to see, you know, this white woman, and especially in this conservative time that she lived in.
Right.
And now she's been gone for, 5 years, and she comes home and she's got this tattoo on her chin that will never go away. And, you know, there's been so many photographs of her, books written about her.
That's
her
great.
Experience. And, of course, they try to paint it in a negative light, like, oh, she was a slave, she was treated badly by them. That tattoo marks her as a slave. It's not a good thing. But a lot of experts and people of Mojave descent have come in and said, no, that's not true, because that tattoo is very distinctive of what the Mojave give themselves to make sure that they secure passage into the afterlife. And they would not have given that to her if they did not consider her one of their own and on their same level. So it really just speaks to just how powerful tattoos and body modification are, you know, what statements they can make and what things they can tell about a people and a culture.
That is amazing. That's a great story. Yeah, the history.
Yeah,
I
recommend, like, looking it up. She's very famous.
Wow. And can you repeat the name again?
It's Olive Oatman. There's
She was I live like the fruit and then OATMAN, and then I'm trying to remember the name of the book that was written by about her, because obviously there was a lot of interest in her afterwards, and everything that became, and because she was so, you know, captives who survived or were brought back from native tribes that they lived in were always a curiosity, because they were like, well, have they gone native now? What's their, you know, where do they feel the most comfortable, with white people or with the tribe they've been living in for the past few years? But yeah, the book about her was called The Blue Tattoo, The Life of Olive Oatman. I remember it was basically a biography of her, and you can see the photo of her, a lot of photos of her with that, it's a very big tattoo on her chin.
Oh, wow. And I know the Apaches, they put different tattoos on their chin. The Apaches, I know a friend of mine many years ago was adopted by the Apache. He put a marking in his chin. Yeah, he tattooed his chin after he was adopted by the Apache. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so. Did they do it the traditional way? I mean, because a lot of the times that was part of it, especially for men, you know, for young men reaching puberty, reaching manhood and everything. Part of it was to be able to endure the pain, you know, because it was a pain. It's a painful process now. You know, I tell you, as somebody who has tattoos, it doesn't feel great. But back then it was, you know, much slower, much more painful, because they'd have to literally, you know, chisel into the flesh with a handmade instrument, and then rub, you know, ash or dirt or whatever would bring the color, the dye that they needed to hold the color in. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's intense. Well, I know my friend has the three lines, his chin. Three lines?
Three lines? Yeah, that sounds about right, yep. The three red lines.
It's painful. Yeah, it looks painful. right on your chin.
I'm sure, yeah. Right, yeah, the face. I mean, you know, your body's sensitive, and the face is especially sensitive. And again, as someone who has tattoos, I can tell you, it hurts now. I can't even imagine how it would have been back then when they have to do it so much slower, and it's such a drawn-out process, and it's so much more painful. But that was part of it, right? You know, that ritual, that pain you go through, and the fact that you're able to withstand it and sit there and take it without crying out, without stopping, without really, you know, showing your strength, showing your endurance. But also, you know, pain can be a very spiritual experience for a lot of people. You know, we know, like in a lot of rituals, like the sun dances and everything, the idea of kind of making a sacrifice of one's body through pain, cutting the flesh or putting yourself through kind of physical duress of whatever kind, enduring as much pain as you possibly could as a way to kind of bring you closer to the spirits, right, into the spirit world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, so I always
think
of the traditional tattooing in that way, too.
You know, it's interesting. I do psychotherapy here in New York City, and it's a little clinic here in East Harlem, and many times during the whole process, the healing process, a lot of people will tell me, you know, just when we're about to terminate, they're like, you know, I want to get a tattoo. And I always say, oh, what you going to do? And they always, you know, oh, I'm going to get this, get that. You know, like you can see it, like in the people, like, okay, this is transition time. This is it. I'm ready. I'm ready for the world. This is a new person. It's the new me. So when I hear this from people, I'm like, okay, they're ready. They're getting close. You know, the healing process, and I hear a lot about tattoos.
Right, and it's a very, you know, people get tattoos for many reasons nowadays, but a lot of the time what you hear is to commemorate something, like you said, healing or moving on, overcoming something, overcoming, you know, addiction or illness. Also, though, to commemorate loved ones or remember loved ones is a big one. You see, you know, they'll put names, they'll put symbols that mean something, or something that's very personal to that represents, you know, part of who they are. But either way, it's all a very intimate, personal experience, right? It's, I mean, of course, yeah,
that's
there's
right.
the times people just are drunk or they're just, you know, whatever they, oh, let me go get a tattoo. I don't care what it's of. You know, that of course
right.
happens. And I'm sure our guest could tell us about that. And I have a cousin who's a tattoo artist and she's told me all about that. But she says the vast majority of the times nowadays, it's someone who comes in with a story behind what they want and why they want it and why they want it, where they want it, you know, and it's always
right.
cool to see how intimate of an experience it is. And, you know, I was reading something by an Inuit tattoo artist who has kind of brought back the art of women tattooing their faces and chests like they used to back pre-colonization days, because the practice was outlawed for a while because, again, it was considered grotesque and unappealing. But now she and one other artist have kind of been pretty influential in bringing it back, this traditional Inuit tattooing. And for women, she says it's very therapeutic because a lot of the times when they get their tattoos, it's associated with overcoming pain, with overcoming struggle, loss, you know, such a variety of things. She said, oh, yeah, I'll have women cry during their sessions, and not because of the pain, just because of the cathartic experience of it. And I've heard that with other modern day tattoo artists as well, who aren't necessarily indigenous artists. It is somewhat of a cathartic experience because it is you modifying your body right forever for something that is very unique to you and to what you care about.
Right, right. You know, I have a replica of a turtle's body stamp. On the top part where you hold it, it's a turtle. Yeah, sorry. It's a frog. And then on the bottom, it's round. And it's like these patterns, Taino patterns. So it's like you put it on your chest or you put it on your back. On your arms. And I had that for a while. And it's cool patterns. It's like these geometrical designs. But that's one thing that we use, right? It was a replica of something they found, so from Dominican Republic.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, that's the thing.
We did that.
Right. With tattooing, from what I've read, there's evidence that Taino did use kind of a little bit of simple tattooing. And interestingly enough, it was mainly the men that they said were the ones who used tattoos the most. And the women preferred piercings, through the face, through the ears, et cetera. But it was the men who were more the ones wearing tattoos. Why that is, I'm not positive. But, you know, that's, like I said, in a lot of the other cultures, it was the women who were wearing that tattoo specifically. So it's interesting that it's kind of reversed with Taino culture. But either way, they said a lot of the times the higher the tattoo or piercing was on the body, that would signify your closeness to the gods and to the semi. You know, the higher up it is shows that you're closer to them. And again, it designates status and a lot about, you know, a person or what they've been through, where they stand mainly, at least with Taino people, it seems it was also for aesthetic reasons as well. And we know we used body paint, of course, that was part of it. Same thing, it was body modification. But now what I've been seeing a lot nowadays is people, now that tattooing is a whole practice and a business here, people get tattoos of for Taino symbols, things that are associated with Taino culture, but also a lot of those things that come from, we were talking about those petroglyphs from all over the islands, the symbols that have become really recognizable to Taino culture. Like I have the Hayuya sun on me. I've seen that on a lot of people. I've seen a lot of people with
right.
the hoki, the turtle you mentioned. I've seen that a lot of places too. Atabe has been a big one that I'm starting to see crop up in a lot of places. Which is really cool because I think that's an awesome design. And then, you know, people
right.
stick with kind of the main elements of the design, but there's always room for, that's the great thing about tattooing is you make it your own, right? You customize it and you incorporate something that means something to you, while also kind of being true to your Taíno culture or whatever culture you come from, and incorporating that symbol. So yeah, I mean, like, I have my Hayuya sun, but I did it the way I wanted it to look. I put it in the colors that I wanted. I spent a lot of time making sure it was exactly the way I wanted it. And even the time in my life that I got it was significant.
That's great. That's great. I think it's important that, a quick question. In your studies, it's interesting, though. Did the Spanish ever record what kind of symbols they see? Was it semi symbols or?
Yeah, it's funny. Again, when I say from what I've read, they say they were there, but they don't go into huge detail. It was, but it wasn't anything super elaborate. It was mainly things like red lines, black lines, things like that. So, which is fair, I guess, for the time and the technology of the time. Tattooing has advanced greatly in terms of us being able to create much more detailed and intricate designs. But I guess for the Taíno during that period, it was mostly just kind of just really basic geometric shapes from what I can see. And that was true for a lot of other indigenous groups throughout North America. Some were able to kind of hone it more and perfect it a little more to create a lot more detail. Like I said, the Inuit people really kind of perfected that art in terms of making these very intricate lines and dot work. A lot of the Polynesian people, who are the most famous for it, the ones who perfected the moko, the mouth and chin tattoo, and doing all those really elaborate dark black spirals and everything all over the body, that was considered kind of the height of tattoo technology, right? But not just in the America. I mean, the Japanese really kind of came up with their own art of tattooing as well, back in the day, that was extremely elaborate, extremely colorful, vivid, very very recognizable, to the point where today, you know, Japanese style tattooing is its own unique style of tattooing, same as, you know, Polynesian or tribal. So I think a lot of it depended on, you know, the resources you have in your particular environment, and the tools you have, and just how, I guess, how into the practice you were. For the Taíno, I guess it wasn't something that they spent a whole lot of time trying to create something super, super intricate, but there were plenty of tribes that did. And, you know, for all we know, those red lines, those black lines could be something just as significant, even though they don't maybe look super elaborate, you know?
Right. Wow, that's deep stuff.
I always say Pocahontas is the only Disney princess with a tattoo, because if you notice, she does have, and hers is pretty simple too. So she's a Powhatan technically, the Powhatan people, from what I have read, higher status people like Pocahontas would have been. She was a chief's daughter, did have tattoos, a lot more actually than what they show. They had a lot on the face and body as well, but you know, I guess Disney wanted to kind of tone it down a little, but they still gave her one, which I think is pretty interesting. And as you can see, it's, you know, it's nothing very crazy. It's just that kind of red tribal print around her upper arm. But it's significant, right? She's the first Disney princess to have one. And among the Powhatan people, that would have shown that she is a high status person.
Wow. That's beautiful. Man, that's
deep. I love it. Yeah, and even the one thing I think is amazing, so I was saying how I came across it in my anthropology studies, so even we find, like, mummies and bodies that are hundreds and thousands of years old have been preserved, have tattoos on them. And some of them are very basic, but some are really, really elaborate, and it's so impressive for the time, especially that they've been preserved all these years. So the fact that, you know, the body is kind of integrated more or less, but that tattoo is still there. One example is, I don't know if you ever heard of Otzi the Iceman, who was found up in the Alps in between Switzerland and Italy.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay.
Yeah, so that was the first,
I remember.
And that was the oldest European mummy ever found, because, you know, until then it's mostly been throughout Egypt, throughout a lot of places in the Americas, these kind of natural mummies. And that's what he was. He was a natural mummy. He wasn't purposely mummified like they would do in ancient Egypt or other cultures. He just was freeze-dried, more or less. He happened to fall there or get injured. They're not quite sure yet. But the environment was so perfect, and the temperature is cold enough that it actually froze him and preserved him enough that they could see the tattoos on his skin. And some of them were pretty elaborate, and they also believe some of them had medicinal purposes as well, because they said when they did a full osteology study, or like a, you know, autopsy, and osteology means the study of the bones and everything, they realized he had signs of arthritis in his wrists, as well as a slipped disc in his back, and they found tattoos right on those specific spots, on his wrist, on that part of his back, on the back of his one knee that had an injury. So they were thinking, that's why they started thinking maybe this was just, you know, for ritual purposes, or maybe there was some medicine in this that they were trying to alleviate pain or something in these particular areas. So I think that's pretty amazing that you can still see them so clearly and all.
Yeah, that is cool. But I wonder if it was painful, though. Right, the person already injured.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, tattoos are painful now. I'm sure they were very painful to do it in the traditional way. But again, I have heard that there are a lot of indigenous artists from various cultures, you know, in Polynesia, in the Americas, who will tattoo you in the traditional way if you want, because again, they believe that is part of the spiritual experience.
Hmm. Well, I tell you right now, we have an indigenous tattoo artist. She's from, let me see if I can get this right. I don't have it in front of me, but she's from the mountains of Florida, from Tallahassee. I think I pronounced it right. I got it wrong.
Tallahassee.
She'll correct me. Yeah. Her indigenous name is Inaru Ashepu Yashi. And the world knows her as Lauren Thurston, so let me get her on the line here for a second. And hold on a second, you see, we still got some paranormal activity going on in from the Spooky Lou show. The studio is messing up a little bit. I knew it. I knew it was going to happen at least once. Ah, we cut her off. She was on the line. If you can hear me, Lauren, if you can hear me, please call back in. Oh, I think she's here. Hold on a second. Wait. There's Spooky Lou, man. Where's Spooky Lou? I knew it. He was, we were there 2 hours last night talking about ghost stories, so.
Yeah, that'll do it.
This is crazy. I knew it. She was smooth until now. You know what I mean? It was smooth.
Okay.
But this is not... Okay, hold on a second. Yeah, there's something wrong with the studio. Please don't tell me. Please don't lose it. All right, let's see if we got it now. Lauren, are you there?
Hey. I think so.
Woo!
Hey, you're on. All right, we got it. Yeah, the Spooky Lou show invaded us for a second, but the studio has been cleansed. Where's that intern? Oh, so, Lauren, this is the first time in Taino Radio. That's awesome. How you doing? Good?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. This is Natalie. This is our resident here, anthropologist. Very good.
Hi, Lauren.
Very good.
Awesome to have you. So excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, this is awesome. So so what you think about what Natalie was saying? Tell us, and we got more questions for you.
Yeah, no. Honestly, she covered a really great basis of, like, everything, honestly, both traditional tattooing and kind of where things are going nowadays. And, you know, even touched on there's – with that specific Inuit artist, and others. Obviously, there's been kind of a more slow moving, but a movement toward kind of re-indigenizing tattooing, which is really neat.
Natalie, I just want to ask a quick question. So, what kind of art you tattoo normally? Wait, hold on. Destroy that your town? Did I destroy it?
It's Tallahassee, which is actually a rendition of a Muskogee word.
Yeah, I was
the
say,
original
please,
Muskogee
please,
word
yeah.
is Tallahassee. Unfortunately, not the mountains either. Florida is like the flattest state in all of the Union. But
he says the mountains are silly
man.
For me too, and that ain't true either. I just kind of go with it.
I respect.
Oh my! Are you near that tragic accident with the building
no,
that collapsed?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's wild. No, that's South Florida. Yeah.
Oh my God! Yeah, we keep them in our prayers, the families. Wow, that's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, that's in where my family is actually in the Miami area.
Oh really? Oh my God! Were you affected by that? Your family or anything?
No. I mean, my cousin lives near that building, but it's not hers, thankfully. But yeah, they've been telling me how crazy it is, and right now, you know, there's a hurricane. Elsa is kind of sweeping through there, too. My family in Cuba was just telling me it went through there, and now it's kind of making its way through South Florida. But I think Tallahassee is, or however you say it, my Muskogee is not up to date. I think you guys are north enough to kind of be out of that range, thankfully. I could be wrong, but.
Yeah, Tallahassee honestly is pretty, like, land protected. So we don't really get a lot of hurricanes, fortunately.
Interesting.
Right.
That's good. So where you work at, you have a tattoo establishment there? What's going on?
Yeah, I work at a shop up here called Euphoria Tattoos. I've been tattooing now for like 5.5 years. It'll be 6 years in December. So now it's kind of... like the first year where I've finally gotten to, you know, like I'm out of my apprenticeship phase and like kind of had enough years under my belt that I'm
Congrats.
Sort of working into like, you know, what do I want to tattoo? What kind of things, you know, like spark interest for me? What are the things that are, you know, I want to put into the world? So that's been a really fun space to be in.
That has to be the most pressure field job ever, man, because I always give it to barbers and hairstylists. You know, sometimes people get upset about their hair, but imagine you make a mistake on skin. It's like
it doesn't feel good.
I honor you guys because that's hard, man. That is
agreed.
Is it agreed? Right?
Yeah, my cousin is a tattoo artist as well, and she and her husband were actually on that show Ink Master, which Lauren,
what?
I'm sure you've seen.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and that I'm just like, dude, this competition is like flawed from the top because like they want you to tattoo in a constricted amount of time, like these really crazy elaborate designs, and you know when. Yeah, with the you don't know anything about your canvas. That's the person you do on. They can be a really crappy canvas. They can have like health issues, medical issues. Their skin can react all sorts of ways. You just go in cold, basically doing these things. And when the judges judge them, I always like feel that I'm like they're like, oh, well, you didn't finish, or this is bad, this is wrong. It's like, well, yeah, because this is like a 6-hour tattoo you made them do in like 2 hours, obviously. Yeah, no one's going to do this. And I guess the canvases agree to do it because they get the tattoo for free, and that's the one thing, but they run the risk of, you know, it's not going to turn out like exactly how they wanted it. And I guess for enough people, that's okay. Me personally, I would never. So I'm like, no, I'm not having you do a big old piece on me and like, what, 1 hour or something, and just, you know, see how it turns out. But
I mean, they're fun to watch and everything, but I'm just like, oh, God, this methodology is flawed.
Yeah, it's definitely wild, too, because it's, like, created this culture where, like, now everybody is like, well, I saw it on Ink Master. They did it really fast. And so, like, they'll come in for, like, a half
right.
sleeve and are like, you can do it in 3 hours, right? And I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen
right.
that way.
And can they even, like, can they sit for a 3 hour, like,
yeah.
or for a whatever 6 hour straight tattoo or something? I mean, like,
no, exactly.
as opposed to sessions.
That's insane. Well, Lauren, are you seeing people coming in asking for Taino designs and stuff?
So I've gotten really, really lucky within the last, like, I would say maybe, like, 2 months. It's finally, like, started kind of trickling in. I got to do one of the bird petroglyphs of the Wabana on somebody.
Ooh, I love that one.
Probably, like, last month. And then I think this week I'm doing sort of like a sugar skull-inspired piece, but like with Taino petroglyphs instead of
wow.
Like the traditional design. So that'll be kind of a fun little mismatch. But yeah, little by little. Been calling in as
That's
the
interesting.
That's so cool.
Because
the sugar skulls, yeah, have become so big lately with tattooing.
Yeah.
Because they are so, yeah, they're beautiful and I get it. You know, we're to the point where a lot of, like, non-Mexican people want them, too, because they're just so aesthetically pleasing. So it's interesting to hear one, though, combined, because, you know, it's a traditionally Mexican symbol, but to combine it with Taino symbolism is really cool. So I'm curious to see how that
yeah.
one turns out.
Yeah, it was definitely a really neat idea. I would have never thought about that.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, Lauren, do you see this as a spiritual experience when you tattoo?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel very, very blessed to be able to tattoo. It is definitely a very sacred practice I don't know. It feels really wild sometimes that, like, I am allowed to do it. But, yeah, there, I guess
it's a big responsibility, right? Like,
yeah, no,
people are
exactly.
putting their bodies into your hand. You know, we were talking before about, like, you know, healers and medical practitioners, but, like, I feel like tattoo artists should get that same kind of credit. Like, people are literally putting their bodies forever, you know, are going to be changed by you, and they're trusting you, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it is very much, like, an energetic transfer. Like, it's a very alchemizing experience, you know? There are a lot of people that are coming for, you know, like, cover-ups of scars or, like, cover-ups of old tattoos or, like, memorial pieces, you know, like, things that they really are kind of asking you to, like, transform this negative energy that they have, that they're carrying around and that they don't want to be anymore. And, yeah, I think that's really
beautiful.
It's
a life-changing experience for a lot of people, isn't it? Like, especially those
yeah,
cover-ups
absolutely.
And everything, with people, you know, get something that's associated with a path that they want to move on from, especially
yeah,
you know, like, things associated with, like, gang activity or hate related stuff, or, you know, even just old relationships, things like that. You know,
yeah.
I love seeing those tattoo cover up stories of being able to take something that has it's part of maybe who they were in their past, but something they want to put behind them, and for the artist to turn it into something beautiful and something that represents who they are now. It's always like, I see people cry and really break down.
Yeah.
It's a life-changing experience for so many people, and that must feel so good for you, right, to be able to be a part of that.
Yeah, no, it definitely is really neat. Like, I actually had a client today where, I guess it is a little bit dissimilar in that she wasn't getting, like, a cover-up necessarily, but it was a memorial for her daughter who had passed. So obviously that was, you know, incredibly
oh, yeah.
heavy, and
that's really heavy.
A big, definitely a big tattoo. But it is also really beautiful to be able to, you know, give somebody a piece of somebody to carry with them. You know, especially when that is somebody that they want to and can't anymore.
Right. Yeah, those are always incredible. I, you know, obviously that's what I was saying before. One of the main
things people get tattoos for is for memorializing people, right? Loved ones who have passed, children that they love, even if it's someone who's not dead. It's just you want to be able to have someone or something with that you love with you always. Like, I have a friend who has a tattoo of her cat, childhood cat, on her. She still loves, obviously, that cat's been dead for a long time now, but it was something important to her, something she loved, and he's always there now.
I love that.
No, I'm curious. Sometimes when I do ceremonies for someone, the individuals and sometimes families, I get sometimes if the energy is like really, really negative, I physically get sick. Sometimes I'll even regurgitate and, you know, really bad.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Do you get that same experience with some individuals?
Honestly, yes. Especially before, I used to be in like a shop where, I was mainly taking walk-ins. So it was mainly like anybody that came in the door and wanted to get tattooed. That was what I was doing for the day. Whereas the shop that I'm in now is mainly appointment only. So I kind of have discretion on like what I'm doing for the day and like kind of have an idea of like what I'm getting into. But yeah, when I was just kind of taking whatever would walk in the door, I definitely was getting like super energetically bombarded because it was just like, I don't know.
Look at that.
Okay, this guy's drunk. This guy like wants, definitely like, very, very overwhelming.
Yeah.
I would like, I remember I was like working on a tattoo and then their like friend was sitting next to them and just turns and is like, hey, so my dad wants to know if you'll do SS bolts on him. And I was like, no, absolutely not.
Wait,
what? Like,
what
wow.
do you mean? So it was just like, I don't know, stuff like that. If you don't really like get the discretion to like, you know, choose who is in your booth with you, then it like, there's just like, there's a lot of people's energy I don't want around me.
You see, I want to put it on the line right now. I definitely want to say that tattoo artists, indigenous tattoo artists, I believe they're part of the Behike, the spiritual ceremonial leaders. I believe. I'm gonna stick my neck out there. You know, this is ceremony. It's ceremony.
No, yeah,
what do you
absolutely.
Think?
Yeah, it's an experience. Every tattoo I've had has been an experience, like a very personal spiritual experience for me. I don't know if it's the same for everyone else, but I'm sure Lauren has experienced it in a variety of different ways. I'm sure people get emotional. People disclose a lot of things, right? Like story, you know, they tell you about themselves and what brought them there, things like that.
No, absolutely. And it is kind of cool because, like, nowadays people really, like, it is sort of on the forefront of their minds. Like, there are quite a lot of people that'll come in and just be like, no, this is, you know, like, therapeutic for me or, you know, et cetera. Well, they'll, like, actually be able to, cognitively recognize that, like, they're doing it for something, like, more, which I think is really beautiful because they're, aren't enough pockets in modern society where I feel like people are seeking that out.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people make fun of me when I go to the islands and stuff. One thing that I dread is if they don't have a heat, those heaters, those calentadores, you know, where they heat the water, because the water there is usually cold. And I hate that. That's like piercing needles all over my body. I don't have tattoos. I hate pain.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I can't imagine.
Cold water, can't handle
tattoo.
That.
If I can't handle cold water, imagine a tattoo. But you know what?
Yeah.
Lauren and I, we spoke about this. She said she's going to tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do a ceremony.
You're
she's going to tattoo
it.
Me. But
she's going to hook you up. Oh, that's awesome.
But I'm telling you, I can't even take a cold shower in the Caribbean. Imagine, but. Jeez,
Well, it's okay.
Hurt.
Well, you just gotta do ceremony beforehand. You know, get yourself ready. Well, you have someone there to hold you down if we have to.
I mean, I've done martial arts, and it's all in the mind, but you know what? It's still going to hurt. It's just like,
yeah, I mean,
it's a constant
probably,
pain, right?
But...
I don't know, man.
I mean, you can
stronger,
you can you get something small, I guess, or some people use like a topical numbing cream. I personally don't know if that really works, and my cousin says it's kind of a myth. But Lauren, I don't know
kind
how you feel
myth,
about
yeah.
that. yeah, like she says it's more like the psychological aspect of it, almost like you tell
yeah.
people you're using it, and they'll be like, oh, okay, so I won't feel anything. And then it's usually,
yeah.
it's like, you know, it's like snake oil. But for some
wow.
reason,
yeah.
it calms them down.
Or it'll, like, kind
well,
of work for the first 30 minutes.
Right.
Can you put me to sleep?
So we just knock you out?
I'll
figure
just,
that one out.
Yeah, you got any of that laughing gas? And then I'll just wake up like, ha, 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 I did it.
Oh, you got this, like, big-ass thing on your arm or something.
We need some laughing gas. I'm telling you, right? I know, right? We like, what happened? Lauren, what's going on here? No, he's
talking. You wanted it on your ass, right?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a whole back piece.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm telling you.
Oh, God.
Where I want that tattoo, right? That says, kiss my final ass.
I feel like that would be a pretty useful one, honestly.
Yeah, I actually really like that idea.
So the Spaniards, you know?
Right, exactly. Right.
500
Take
years
Take it back,
too
1492. Right?
Right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's so cool.
But
if she gives you your tattoo, you better, like, post a picture of that or something.
Word, man, and I have my, I don't know, some pain reliever or something afterwards, right? Oh, man. Well,
yeah, usually
well,
at least that's the good thing is, mm-hmm. like, it doesn't last too long. So it's
oh,
pretty, the pain's pretty much over, like, after it's done.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they give you, like, a break in between, I mean, like, my last one was, like, 3 hours, you know, they'll let you, like, take a breather in between, stretch, whatever. It's not like it's,
oh, what?
They're just carving into you for like, you know, yeah. You give like, you say, can I just take a minute or, you know, whatever.
Right.
They'll do that. It's not like they're tying you down, you know.
Well, Florida, do they sell medallas in Florida? That beer medalla from Puerto Rico? I think it's
medalla, unfortunately not. I wish.
Yeah,
we have
no
a couple
allowed,
of good beers,
right?
But no medalla.
Wow. Now, this is a serious question. Do they allow people to smoke cannabis before or maybe an edible just to ease the pain?
It can't
that's
stop
what's
you,
the pain.
I don't think.
Right.
This is medicinal in Florida, so whatever's clever. I definitely am never going to be like, no, because it's the most useful. So.
All right. I'm going to go to that shop and ask for those Taino gummies. That's it. I'm ready, Lauren. Go for it. This warrior is ready.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you hear stories about people saying, like, oh, I got this stupid tattoo when I was drunk or I was high or whatever. So, Lauren, I always wonder, like, if someone comes in, like, you know, like, off their face, like, do you ever feel like you should be, like you have some kind of, like, responsibility to be like, no, I can't tattoo you in this state or something? Or
yeah,
is
no,
that
absolutely.
Just, yeah.
That definitely
because
happens.
I would think,
yeah, it there are definitely people that'll come in like really really sloshed sometimes, and yeah, you kind of just have to be like, well, next time I guess. Like, can't do it this one, but
yeah, because I would think like if someone is like so obviously like, you know, off their head, like drunk or high or whatever, and because there just are like bad tattoos of while being under the influence are such an epidemic for people, like I would think, like, and especially nowadays since tattooing is you know, it's not an underground practice anymore, you would feel that
yeah.
there's like health concerns but also like, you know, ethical concerns, like, no, I'm not gonna do this while you're like, you don't even can't even say your own name, and then you're gonna wake up with
yeah.
this thing and be like, what the hell.
No, exactly.
So you have had to do that.
You know,
you've had to, like, tell people, like, no.
Yeah, definitely.
yeah, for like a variety of reasons, just like too drunk or on drugs or even just like you have a really bad sunburn. And I think that is a health problem.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there are a lot of different reasons why I would have to, you know, like reschedule somebody for X, Y, or Z reason.
Now, how about diabetes? If someone is diabetic, does that affect the tattoo, or is it that take precautions?
So it usually affects the healing process a little bit more than like the actual tattooing process. Just typically, it'll take a little bit longer to heal. Kind of a specific pattern that like the skin will kind of some of the colors will end up essentially like the pore spots won't hold color as well. So there's like a certain pattern that happens. Yeah, it's very interesting. It doesn't happen like every time either. But there is like a pretty specific pattern that I can usually like tell if somebody will like come back in, and like you can obviously go back over it and like touch it up and it's not really like a problem necessarily. But that like prolonged healing process just kind of can kind of mess with some of the colors for a second.
Right. Well, especially like, you know, like half of it is aftercare too. That's another thing, Sanakori. If you do this, you can't just, once it's done, you got to make sure you take care of it and like keep it out of the sun, lotion it, keep it clean, because it's a wound that's healing, and you got to make sure you do it for the next couple of weeks, because a lot of the times they say why tattoos don't turn out good is you know, not the artist's fault, but just like bad aftercare. I'm sure, you know, Lauren, I'm sure you've seen that on multiple times.
Yeah.
He was, oh, you screwed up my tattoo. It was like, well, no, I didn't. Did you? You probably screwed it up by this or this.
Yeah. No, it's definitely always, you know, people will come back and be like, wow, you messed up. You know, this tattoo healed really awful, like XYZ. And then you're like, okay, well, so like, what did you do? And they're like, well, I went swimming at the beach for every single day, all day for the past week. You're like, dang it. That's definitely why. Or just like, yeah, stuff like that. Like,
wow.
I went on a mud run and I rubbed dirt in it for 3 days.
Mud
run. Like, no.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And I mean, it's sometimes accidents happen, you know, you gotta take care of it. At least for those first few weeks when it's still healing. That's the thing I learned. 'Cause I had something happen. I like accidentally scratched mine in my sleep, and you know, that's the worst thing you're supposed to do when you first get one is like scratch it. 'Cause it's, you know, it's like picking a scab basically.
Yeah.
And I guess I did it in like my subconscious. Yeah. You know, I was asleep and I guess I did it subconsciously, 'cause I woke up and like, there was like the pieces, like the crust all over my fingernails and blood. And I was like, oh my God, I like ruined this thing forever. Thankfully I did not, but that's one of the things they always, they warn you about. But also like allergies, people's skin just having different reactions. It's just, it's so interesting to hear all the different things that can affect it, you know?
Yeah. Even pet hair, that one's a big one that nobody really thinks
about,
but even just like petting your animal and getting their like dander, and it can irritate it a lot.
No way. That's
or like
crazy.
Even
I've
infect
never heard
it.
That one.
Yeah.
See?
Oh, and infected. That, I can't even imagine. I've seen pictures. It's so horrific looking.
Oh, it's really gross, yeah.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
You know, I want to open up the phone lines. If anyone wants to call in, anyone want to share their tattoo stories, any petroglyphs, abamaze that been tattooed on your body, the guest call-in is 515-602-9792. That's 515-602-9792. You guys got a little more time on your hands here? We can go a little overtime if you like.
Yeah,
I'm okay. Lauren, I have a question. Cool. Do you have any Taino tattoos on yourself or any tribal ones?
I do. So I have the Sol de Jayuya on one of my hands, and then I have the Sol of Utuado on the other hand. And then I have a little cookie symbol.
Of course.
And I have the word Otoao.
Oh, really?
I think that is all so far. I definitely have
you're, like, standing you're over yourself plan. Right now.
Yeah, I'm like, where'd they go?
Is that
but
where
I
you're from?
I also
Atlanta?
Have, I'm sorry? No, I'm actually
is
from
Is that where
Ponce.
You're from, Utuado? Oh, Ponce. Oh, I thought you said that you tattoo Utuado, you said?
The word Otowau, so like the where Utuado comes from.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
cool. So what significance is that for you? I'm just curious.
So it means like between mountains, and I guess I had gotten it after I'm a rock climber also, so I guess I had gone on like an outdoor trip, and I found myself in this like little tiny crack like between mountains, and I'm horribly claustrophobic, and it was just like a very stressful experience. And I like got up to the top and just like cried and hugged a tree because it was like too much.
Wow.
So yeah, I got that because I yeah. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it sounds like the semi were with you and protecting you, and I can definitely be inspired being inspired to get a tattoo after an experience like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I definitely have a lot of like the birds that we have in Puerto Rico. I have one of the parrots, and I guess I'm planning to get a guaraguao.
Wow,
yeah.
Look at that. Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah, I definitely...
That's good.
Yeah.
Let me... Yeah. Wow, so you got to give me some of your bravery.
Pass it over.
My
yeah,
mom has
definitely.
One. If she can do it, you can do it. Son of-
I know. I'm still cringing here. I'm still cringing. This is like... I'm going to do it. Tallahassee?
Yeah.
All right, there you go. I'm going all the way to Tallahassee. That's it.
We should do a show that day when you do it. We'll, like, broadcast you getting your tattoo. It would be great.
Word,
love
and
you.
I just, like, passed. So I'm like, what, he just passed out? He just passed out.
That happens, too, sometimes, right? I've heard about that happening. Has that happened to you, Lauren, where your canvas passes out?
Oh, I think we lost her.
Did we lose her?
The Spooky Lou show is back. The Spooky Lou show is back.
That was so weird because I said, does your canvas pass out? And then it's just like quiet. It's like, oh, no, did you?
Word, she passed out. Word. See, if I pass out, keep me passed out. Just keep carving. Oh, wait, she's back.
I'll tell them do not resuscitate.
That's right, please.
I've definitely had a lot of people pass out. Honestly,
then you're back.
Over the
we
years.
You for a second.
Yeah, she's back. She's
yeah,
back. You're back. You were gone for a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, so if I pass out, leave me alone. It's all right. I'll give you permission. If I pass out, don't wake me up.
I'll just be like, guy's gone.
And like, all right, let's get to work now.
Word, that's it. But,
hurry and finish before he wakes up.
I know, man. So what are the protocols for that? If someone passes out, you got to call 911 or something?
No, for the most part, it usually is kind of just like a blood sugar drop. So you can usually honestly just like get them a soda or like some candy, and they'll come back. The only time that it's ever been like a real issue, I like had somebody literally pass out and pee their pants. And then that was like a whole different, like a many, many set
Wait.
Of protocol difference.
Wait, what was that? They passed out. What happened?
They peed their pants.
Oh, you see,
yeah.
That's. Wow.
You gonna
that
do
was
that?
The only time that's ever happened, though.
Well, I'm an older guy, so I got to be careful. All right, I won't drink beforehand.
I believe that won't happen.
I'm going to go on the Bahia fast. That's it, 40 minutes.
Was that, like, in the middle of the tattoo? So, like, you had to stop and, like, leave the tattoo, like, unfinished, I'm assuming?
Yeah, it was pretty terrible. It happened pretty much like at the start of it. Yeah, it was not good. It happened pretty much at the start of it. So I was like, well, clearly we're not finishing this tattoo because that was traumatic for both of us, right? And she was like, no, I would definitely like to finish it before I leave. And I was like, oh,
well,
okie dokie.
Like, pee pants?
Yeah, basically. So she finished it in her pee pants. And like ate some like Chick-fil-A, and then we got back to it, and it was wild.
Oh my god!
Wow. Well, you like the doctor. That's the name. You know, you like the doctor. You like the Bahike. You got to see everything. You see everything.
Yeah, she's like, I've seen it all. Right?
Yeah, I definitely confidentiality. Had a couple of shots afterwards. It was a lot.
You know, I wanted to ask you this. You know, when I work with teenagers, and I find this more in teenage girls, I don't know why this is, that majority of the time, the teenage girls, that they do self-harming. You know, they're always cutting themselves, and we don't work on safety plans and so on, but they're always saying, man, I can't wait till I'm 18, whatever. I'm going to get so many tattoos. And then we talk about that, you know, how that is therapeutic. You know, again, that I guess is that rite of passage or dealing with hard times during their lives, that it brings them comfort. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's actually a topic that I really like. I don't know. It's interesting even because I dealt with that a lot in my youth as well. And there was definitely a moment where, I don't know, like one, the sensations are kind of similar. So there became a moment where it was like, well, I can do, you know, this one thing that is, you know, productive and like beautiful and bringing me joy, you know, versus this thing that I'm using as a coping mechanism that actually really hurts. There is honestly a lot of like overlap between them. And even using, you know, like tattoos and tattooing to cover up old self-harm scars is definitely a like fairly common thing as well.
So do you think it's the idea of, like, catharsis through pain, you know, like, because from what I know about, you know, cutting and self-harm, a lot of the time it's like you get a somewhat of a relief, like, of your, you know, emotional pain through the physical pain. And tattooing can mimic that, right, because it's physical pain as well. But instead of having, like, a scar, you're going to have something pretty instead. So it's almost like it's more accepted, you know?
Yeah, and it also, you know, kind of along those lines is, you know, like while it is kind of using pain to, like, get through something, it is also, you know, kind of a very grounding moment. The pain that you experience in tattooing really does kind of bring you into your body. So I think that a lot of times when, you know, people are dealing with, you know, that amount of grief, something that can bring them back into the physical sensation of their body is kind of what's important. And yeah, doing that with, you know, something that is, you know, an image or a person or a moment or, you know, some sort of initiation that you feel, you know, during your walk of life is definitely great way to tie all of that together.
That's
I definitely agree. That's why I said it does seem like it's always a spiritual grounding experience, as you said, because it is about connecting to your body and altering your body forever, ultimately, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's what is so interesting about, you know, specifically like this resurrection of more traditional, like types of tattooing and more traditional, you know, ways of going about it. Just kind of grounding all of our various, traditions and various spiritualities kind of into this present moment, into ourselves.
Right. Cause I was saying before, so many of those practices were outlawed, right? For a lot of indigenous groups, for so long, it was another form of, cultural oppression and genocide was to say
to take away this very, you know, very personal and very, like, ritual experience that a lot of us use, that was such a big part of our identity. So to see this, like, revitalization of Indigenous tattooing, not only to be like, you know, hey, forget you guys, like, you know, kind of fuck your standards of beauty or of what is not, or what is or is not attractive, because it's so much more than that, right? It's beyond just aesthetics. It's not just they think, oh, this is ugly and grotesque, so don't do it. Like, it's not to necessarily look good for someone. It goes much deeper than that, and I think it's really a way to bring back again that identity, or part of that part of that identity that has been oppressed for so long.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it
and I love that, you know, attitude that, you know, people, like, tattooed people have, like, a lot of people always say, oh, you know, the thing, I'm sure you've heard it, Lauren, is you probably have a lot of people, oh, what are you going to think when you're older, when you have all these things, like, are you going to still want them, what are people going to think when they see you, as, like, a 70-year-old some woman with all these tattoos, and it's like, they're going to think you look badass, and honestly, fuck them. Who cares what they say? Like, it's not for them. It's for you. I mean, it's your body. It's not about, like, what other people find attractive. Personally, I think tattooed people of any age look awesome, so I don't even see what the issue is there, but it's kind of a...
I always laugh because I'm like, your skin at 70 doesn't look awesome either, Carol. Calm down.
Right,
fine.
Yeah. what does it matter at that age? Like, what? Like, you know, it doesn't look for... It's. I never understood that argument because it's like, she'll look like a... Or she will look like an elderly person with ink on their body. It's not going to, like, change who they are. And honestly, I think they look awesome. And it's... I think it's something that really kind of, again, it's a way to sort of fly in the face of traditional, conventional beauty standards, right? Because that's what it has historically been associated with.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, I remember in the 2000s, after Mike Tyson did his 4-year stint in jail, he came back and he had face tattoos. He had a face tattoo, the Maori.
Yeah.
I believe it was a Maori tattoo. And people were, like, scandalized.
It is,
like, oh, he's nuts. He's totally gone insane. You know, what is this? You know, the media. Like, what? You know, and now it's like, it's the norm now, right? To see a lot of people doing this, you know, tattooing, facial tattoos.
Even
too,
like,
right?
Yeah, even face tattooing, like what we were talking about, like the Maori Mokos and the Inuit face tattoos. And because, yeah, it's like, tattoos are one thing, but face tattoos are like a whole nother thing. And I've seen way worse face tattoos than Mike Tyson's. I mean,
I know.
Yeah,
right?
There are definitely some wild ones.
Right. So I think if you're going to have one, I mean, to have one that has cultural and spiritual significance is a beautiful thing. And, you know, so I don't think that's something people should be judged for, but they do, unfortunately, in our culture. People with tattoos in general still get judged sometimes, especially the more they have, the more visible they are, and the face ones, obviously, you can never hide. You know, I have some Maori friends who all want mokos, but they always are worried about how it'll affect their, you know, their job prospects and everything, because they still do get judged for it. And I think, you know, it's a shame for that, because, again, it's not like it's like a gang teardrop or something. It's something that is very, very sacred to them, very personal to them, and harkens back to something very powerful. So I think, if anything, they should be, you know, lauded for their courage and pride to be able to do that and wear that so unashamedly.
Yeah, you know, I remember as a kid, and, you know, I'm a former wrestler and stuff, and I remember as a kid watching High Chief Peter Maivia. He's actually the grandfather of The Rock, the wrestler and actor, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, wow. Okay, so
That's his grandfather. Yeah, and he's a real chief. He was a real chief. He's deceased now, but he was a real chief from the Samoan Nation, and he used to have the leg tattoos. His whole legs were tattooed all the way up to the waist. And I remember seeing, I was like, damn, that guy's scary, you know, like look at his legs, and, you know, and they kind of like, you know, the high chief, you know, everyone feared him, you know, he had these tattoos. And but that was like,
well,
I, back
then,
I was like.
That's what those taco dances were for. You show off your tattoos and look scary.
Intimidating
as hell.
Yeah, the indigenous were always seen as fierce or scary, you know, boogie people, right? The
right,
tattoos.
And those body, you know, those, I think the body modifications, like I was saying earlier, coming from a very conservative Christian European perspective, you see people with these tattoos and these, you know, piercings through their faces and you know, big hoop, big earrings, or even sometimes like teeth serration was a body modification where people would sharpen their teeth, file down the teeth. Like, to them it was like, oh my God, you know, they probably didn't even look human to coming from their perspective.
Well, I always thought Popeye was cool. He had his tattoo too, right in his arm, the Popeye the Sailor.
Anchor,
the cartoon. He had the anchor, right?
Cool. That's a whole school of tattooing too, is sailor and traditional.
But you know, the indigenous man. I think we started the trend, I guess, right? The indigenous peoples throughout the world of tattooing.
Yeah.
Well, you said
Scottish, too,
right?
Right. Well, like I said, in pre-Christian Europe, there's evidence that there was ancient tattooing. And then after, you know, exploration and colonization, when they were encountering people of different indigenous cultures throughout the Americas, but also in Asia and the South Pacific, that is kind of what brought it into, you know, the Western world, more or less, and why it had a resurgence in the Western world.
Well, you know what's cool? A lot of Tainos that I know, we actually dedicated a show on martial arts, you know, in the Taino.
That's right, yeah,
how
I remember
Tainos
that.
Love martial arts. Remember that? You know, there's a Shaolin. The traditional Shaolin temple training, after 13 years, once you pass all your tests, you know, including compassion and service, you will have to go through a whole. The final test will be like either life or death. You know, they have like poisonous darts. They had all these obstacles you had to pass, right? And then at the end, once you reach the last room, there was a huge cauldron that was 300 pounds. It was a cauldron burning with coal inside. And at the size of this cauldron, there was a symbol of the tiger and the dragon. And then you had to put your forearms, the inner forearm, you had to lift the cauldron with your forearms. And as you lift it, the fire, I guess the heat, will engrave these tattoos on your arms. So you will move the cauldron, and then the door will open. It's like a trap door kind of thing. And whenever people saw someone with those tattoos, they said, oh, that's a Shaolin monk. That's a Shaolin priest. That made him the priest. So it was like a whole ritual to that. But just to get to that spot.
So it was like, was it like a burn, like a scar? Like a scar, ritual?
It was a scar, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the cauldron is burning with coal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, ritual scarification is another body modification that was practiced a lot among, you know, indigenous groups too.
Look at that.
That's interesting. Yeah, and even like frats, I think. One of my teachers in like high school, he had like a burn of his like frat symbol on his arm, like a little star. And I asked him one day what it was about. He said, oh, yeah, what we used to do back in like the 70s or whatever. I'm like, that looks horrible.
Wow.
Like that looks way worse than a tattoo.
Wow.
But you know,
but
it is a thing, ritual scarification for aesthetic purposes. Yeah, there's a tribe in Papua New Guinea that does it to try to replicate, like, alligator scales on the backs of young boys, where they make all these cuts and then rub clay into it in these, like, patterns, so there's, like, these ridges, you know?
That is interesting. Well, I know in the Shaolin tradition, I know in Shaolin, when they went to the villages, you know, once you finish that, the cauldron, you had to leave the temple to teach the people, you know, and they were, it was like equivalent to a PhD. So they would teach, they would empower the people, the villages. And then when the emperor found out, it's like, wait a minute, we got to find who's doing this. And they will find them through their tattoos. And many of them were murdered by the government.
God.
So they always had like they had to hide their tattoos, the dragon and the tiger. So
yeah,
man,
there's always been that dark
always
side of tattooing too, which I think is what makes them so kind of taboo, and so there's such a mystique to them, because they could be used not only, you know, obviously personal expression and identification and everything, but that could be used for bad reasons too. Like a lot of criminals in China and Japan were often tattooed, and so those tattoos would denote them as criminals for the rest of their life. Obviously during the Holocaust, what was done at Tration camp to mark the Jewish prisoners. There is that dark side to it that I think has always been part of why it's so taboo, because you know, if you're not the one in control of your tattooing, it can be used almost as a way of like a mastery over your body, right? I mean, same way slaves and runaway slaves were branded. We were talking about, you know, burns and scarification, branding and scarring, same kind of thing. It's this loss of bodily autonomy, which is like a really scary thing to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I got one final question though, because no one can answer this. I don't think I ever asked this question, but I'm curious, there's a lot of people that I've seen in wrestling or just people in the streets, they tattoo their throats, like the neck and throat area. Now, I know in the throat there's a jugular vein right there. Like, is that dangerous, though, to make a double tattoo by a jugular vein? I mean, that sounds like suicidal.
That's kind of the interesting thing. Tattoos actually aren't going through all of the layers of skin. So tattoos go kind of in between the third and fourth layer of skin. So like under your dermis, but not until you get to the epidermis. So there still is kind of a fairly thick layer of skin in between, you know, where we're going and like your veins and arteries and things like that.
Yeah, man, that's the thing. So, do you get scared with that? Like, you ain't getting, you know... tattooing over a vein.
It definitely feels kind of intimidating when you start getting on like that thin skin up there. But yeah,
wow,
I guess you
kind of
just have to keep telling yourself like it's okay and like it won't. I don't know. Like I've had to do like inner lip tattoos before, and like that always gets really stressful because you're like, oh gosh, like am I gonna like poke it through to like the other side somehow, which like you're definitely not going to, but it's like very stressful.
What?
Those inner lip ones never last. I don't know why people, those are dumb. Like the skin in your mouth is not good for tattooing, but people, it's like a trend. Some people do. And it always ends up fading. I'm pretty sure.
You can definitely get it in there, but it's like most people want it to fade. So then when you like do it correctly and it stays, they're like, damn.
Yeah, but it looks weird. The ink distorts.
Yeah,
it's
always
it's
really
so
weird.
Yeah, it's, and you know, she's right. Like there are more sensitive, delicate area. I mean, like the eyelids, I saw one person getting at one point, that one would terrify me, getting or giving.
Absolutely.
Same thing. It's literally a needle by your eye. Of course, a lot of people like to do their genital area, but that's got its risks too and its discomforts, I'm sure. But she's right. It's a science with tattooing. There's multiple layers to your skin, and to get the ink in there enough, it goes only through, I think it's like, what did you say, the first three or four layers?
Before
you could cause any serious damage.
Small little layer in between your third and fourth. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty
Because the other problem that can cause, like, that's what causes blowout, right? Like, if you put the ink in too deep or not deep enough.
Yeah, so it's like essentially if it goes in too deep and it hits the layers of your epidermis have more like lipid fats in them. So the ink just kind of disperses in those lipids.
Yeah. So there's like, I mean, people always think tattooing is all you just go in, you know, but I, like, as Lauren, I'm sure can tell you, and from what I've heard from my cousin, you know, you need to know anatomy, you need to know how, you know, dermatology, you need to be an artist, obviously, but you also need to have a very, you know, steady hand, a good eye, but also know enough, be in touch enough with the human body to make sure you know how it's going to react on a certain, like, based on where it is on the body, based on the type of skin, color skin, age of skin, things like that. So, yeah, I think you guys as tattoo artists don't get enough credit for what it is you do because, you know, I mean, first of all, you're artists, and being an artist is amazing in general. Like, anyone who can create art is talented in my book, but to be able to do it on the medium of human skin is, like, a whole other level.
That is deep.
Yeah,
yep,
it's definitely, it's weird.
Skin deep.
Exactly. Like, I hear so many people who are artists, and they say, oh, I could be a tattoo artist, you know, because I'm a good drawer or whatever. And I'm just like, so what, man? Like, that's like literally, that's like one fraction of it. That's, you know, I'm not a bad drawer either, but I'm not about to go tattoo nobody's skin. Like,
no, yeah, it's honestly like a really weird transition too, because like I've been like drawing all my life, and so like before I started doing it, you know, I was just like, okay, like it can't be that bad, right? Like I can learn, and it definitely, like, the first time that you like go to try and pull a line with an actual machine, you're like, dang, there's like three dimensions now to trying to draw. Like, I can't push too hard. Like, what's going on here?
I need to be good at this.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's, like, I don't know, trying to stretch the skin also, and then also draw a straight line with this, like, vibrating machine while you're, like, pulling with your hand that you're drawing. It's, like, weird.
People move or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
so,
well,
yeah,
it's
I
safe
agree
to
with Sanakori. You guys are in the, I think you're definitely in the Behike family in terms of, you know, the spiritual aspect to what you do.
Yeah, I want to go on record and say that, so... Lauren, you're in, man. You're the Behike.
Love
That's it. Yeah. But it's safe to say when I see you in Tallahassee, is it Tallahassee?
Yeah.
It's safe to say that I'm not going to get an inner lip tattoo.
Yeah, we'll put it somewhere cooler.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so,
those
so
are for,
somewhere
those
doesn't
are
hurt
for
that much.
People who are lame.
I want it somewhere where it doesn't hurt. I guess the shoulders don't hurt that much, right? The shoulders?
Yeah, shoulder's not too bad. Shoulder, like, anywhere on your arm.
Yeah, like right
the
above
the
bicep, the
area,
right?
Yeah, that one's not bad.
Yeah, I think that's a cool spot right there, though. I think that's I think that's cool, you know? Flex that muscle in the beach,
no,
you know?
Absolutely.
Hey, man, I got a tattoo, man. Hey, I'm brave.
See, you're using it as a status symbol right now, like we were talking about. You're using it to show you show how brave and strong you are.
They're like, wow, that guy's strong. Look at that. Look at that tattoo. Wow.
Yeah, you're a badass. If you have tattoos, you're a badass.
See, but they didn't know that I passed out and I peed on myself. See, they didn't know that part, but it's all right. Lauren's family, so.
She won't tell.
Don't worry, man.
Secret,
I'm going to show where my... I don't know, man. I have to wear diapers. I don't know. Yeah, that's pain. It's pain. Well, listen, we're totally over time. This is beautiful, man. We could talk all night. That's it, man.
Yeah, this was such a great conversation, though.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. Well,
Lauren, thank you so much. It was
things.
So awesome to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Thank you for
you,
having
Lauren.
Me.
Yeah, thank you, Lauren. And, you know, I have one song I like to end the show with. It's a song I never actually played. And I downloaded it maybe last year. It's from Papua New Guinea. So since you mentioned about Papua New Guinea, the two-minute song, let's check it out. I don't even remember how it sounds, so let's see. Dedicated to all the indigenous people who have tattoos and all those indigenous tattoo artists. And all tattoo artists throughout the world. this song is dedicated to you guys. How about that? Thank you once again.
Sweet.
Indigenous crew.
Thank you,
Indigenous
Sam
Caribbean.
Cody.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Indigenous Caribbean Study Hour once again.